WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. A trailblazer of school desegregation in Charlottesville, and one of the women featured in WMRA's Voices of Integration series, returns to her hometown to address a women's leadership forum. Virginia's top elections official attended a conference in February, apparently sponsored by conservative groups aimed at tightening voting laws. And full disclosures, Robin Farzad talks about the rich people from elsewhere spending money on Virginia's election campaign this year. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, April 25th. One of three men charged with using a burning object for racial intimidation in August 2017 has been released on bond. The Daily Progress reports that Dallas Medina of Ravenna, Ohio, appeared in Albemarle Circuit Court last week. Medina allegedly was part of a group of white supremacists who gathered almost 6 years ago at the University of Virginia, carrying flaming torches and shouting racist slogans. The felony charge of burning an object with intent to intimidate carries a maximum 5-year prison sentence. Also indicted was Tyler Bradley Dykes of Bluffton, South Carolina. He appeared in court on Friday after being held at the Albemarle Charlottesville Regional Jail since his arrest. Dykes' bond was denied. Will Zachary Smith of Nakona, Texas, also appeared in Albemarle County Circuit Court Friday. His attorney argued successfully to move the planned bail hearing to May 3rd. Smith also faces a charge of discharging a noxious or nauseating gas, which carries a maximum sentence of 20 years. A trailblazer of school desegregation in Charlottesville returned to her hometown to address the Emily Kirk Leadership Forum. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
The forum held its annual luncheon on Monday to celebrate the 2023 Women's Leadership Awardee, Sandra Wicks Lewis, and 11 scholarship recipients. The organization is named in honor of the late Virginia State Senator, who was the sister of broadcaster Katie Couric. Lewis gave the keynote address to a full ballroom at the Omni Hotel. She spoke about Virginia's history of massive resistance to school integration in the 1950s and her role in overthrowing it. Part of her talk was also a love letter to the village that helped raise her.
The key places where I spent a lot of my time were Burley High School, Washington Park, and Mount Zion Baptist Church. There were role models galore because the Black community had an overarching mission to elevate ourselves educationally and economically.
Lewis was one of the Charlottesville 12, the child plaintiffs who, in 1959, were the first Black students to attend formerly all-white schools in the city.
Children, more than ever, need security and protection, role models and mentors, affordable quality housing, and not good, but great educations, starting in early childhood.
The attendees gave Lewis a standing ovation. Then, Forum Board Chair Meredith Gunter presented 11 young women, seniors from each high school in Charlottesville and Albemarle County, with scholarships ranging from $18,000 to $50,000. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
You can learn more about this story and hear Randy's previous interview with Lewis as part of WMRA's series, Voices of Integration, at WMRA.org or on the app. Virginia's top elections official attended a conference in February sponsored, according to The Guardian, by conservative groups who want to tighten voting laws. A spokesperson for the Department of Elections says it paid for Commissioner Susan Beals' roughly $200 a night hotel stay. Ben Pavier with VPM News has more.
The Washington, D.C. conference was led by the Heritage Foundation. The group argues fighting voter fraud should be a top priority for lawmakers. But Delegate Candy Munden King, a Democrat who serves on the House Elections Committee, says Commissioner Susan Beals has bigger problems. That includes a March incident where a department staffer mistakenly turned over the state voter file, complete with Social Security numbers, to the Fairfax County Republican Committee.
And there's just been issue after issue with our Department of Elections that she could focus her energy on.
Andrea Gaines, a spokesperson for the department, said the Fairfax County Republicans signed an affidavit stating they'd immediately deleted the file. Gaines also defended Beal's attendance at the conference, saying the commissioner was already in D.C. for unrelated meetings.
Ben Pavier reporting. Governor Glenn Youngkin met with the president of Taiwan on Monday to discuss mutual trade and investment initiatives and other business matters. Youngkin also signed an executive order establishing an economic development office in Taipei. The visit happened on day one of Youngkin's first international trade mission and amid heightened tensions between the United States and China, which claims Taiwan as its own territory and treats dealings between the U.S. and Taiwanese officials as a challenge. Following his meeting with President Tsai Ing-wen, the Republican governor, along with the rest of the Virginia delegation, is also expected to visit Tokyo and Seoul, South Korea, as the trade mission continues this week. Democrats in Virginia are outraising Republicans ahead of the General Assembly election this fall. The Virginia Public Access Project reports that Democrats have about $21 million in the bank. That's about $5 million more than Republicans. All 140 seats in the General Assembly are up for election this year. Democrats also outraised Republicans in 2019, the last time every seat was in play. In 2011 and 2015, Republicans held the fiscal advantage. Governor Youngkin recently announced that he had raised about $3 million during the first quarter of this year. His political team said the funds would be used to help Republicans take control of the General Assembly. Well, let's get some perspective now on that fundraising from Robin Farzad, host of Public Radio's Full Disclosure, and Virginia Public Radio's Craig Wright discussing political contributions from the world's wealthiest people.
All right. Last week, billionaire Thomas Peterffy made headlines with a large contribution to Glenn Youngkin's political action committee. Robin, why would a Hungarian-born Florida resident make a $1 million contribution to Glenn Youngkin's Spirit of Virginia PAC?
Why do we diversify our investing portfolio? Because there's a chance something can really go wrong with a single stock, or something can go awry. There could be a financial crisis at one country. And I'll tell you that a shameless and timely plug is that we delved into exactly this. We called it the Youngkin midterm on the latest Full Disclosure with Michael Pope and Jeff Shapiro, who you hear every week on Virginia Public Radio. Highly recommended you listen to that podcast. Look, Donald Trump is in the lead right now. There's a chasm between him and the presumptive, you know, competitor in Ron DeSantis. There's almost like a two to one difference. And then there's everyone else, Mike Pence, Nikki Haley, the rest of the world, and coming in very, you know, maybe nearly at a half a point nationally in the Real Clear Politics average poll of polls is someone like Glenn Youngkin. But having said that, things can and do fall apart. Trump and DeSantis could fall apart, and we're still early in this race. And to the extent that you give this guy some funding, some notoriety, we're here talking about it. Axios covered it. The Washington Post covered it. He's still technically in the race.
And yet, Governor Glenn Youngkin has said that he is not currently interested in making a run in 2024. His focus is strictly on Virginia and achieving a Republican majority in the General Assembly. So you don't necessarily believe that?
I think that deferring and demurring, they're kind of state of the art at this stage of the election cycle. Look, Ron DeSantis himself is not even officially declared. He's kind of the presumptive competitor to a Donald Trump. But look, you can also really truly believe that you're not running for president this time around. Why not sit it out and let the other guys duke it out? But you're building cred and notoriety and presumption for the next cycle, because again, he's term limited. So certainly money doesn't hurt. Being able to say, well, I was governor of a swing state and I had this much popularity, and even though I can't run for reelection, I got a lot of people reelected and I can do this for your state. So that has currency in 2026, 2028 and beyond.
Right. Well, the lines between business and politics can sometimes get blurred. I guess it shouldn't come as a shock to anyone that the extremely wealthy have interest in seeing certain individuals or parties in power. Can you shed some light on exactly what it is that they're trying to achieve?
Ron DeSantis is much more of a culture warrior. Trump is an idiosyncratic candidate who really has the base on hold. I don't think either is necessarily a huge torchbearer for markets or much lower taxes, even though that's part of the coalition and the agenda. Whereas the private equity governor, Glenn Youngkin, he's out there. He's trying to back similarly kind of fiscally hawkish candidates and trying to prove that his PAC can help them in this what's called the 2023 Youngkin midterm. And it's kind of a dying art, the fiscally conservative, nationally relevant GOP. You saw what happened to Mitt Romney in 2012. You saw many other senators and governors who were felled with that kind of agenda, because there's much more of a red meat right wing agenda that's winning the base of the party. So Youngkin, you know, who knows where he's going to end up. If any of these top two candidates flame out, this could be a seed investment for the year 2028 or beyond.
And we will be here to keep an eye on it all. We've been speaking with Robin Farzad. He's the host of Public Radio's Full Disclosure. I'm Craig Wright. Robin, we will look forward to talking with you again next week.
Thank you, Craig. I appreciate it.
Finally today, the Environmental Protection Agency has proposed a settlement in a multi-state lawsuit over cleaning up the Chesapeake Bay. WHRO's Catherine Hafner reports.
Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, and D.C. filed the lawsuit in 2020, along with others including the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. They argue the EPA isn't doing enough to enforce the Chesapeake Bay cleanup. A 2014 agreement between states around the watershed set targets for limiting harmful nutrients like nitrogen and phosphorus that enter local waterways. Officials have acknowledged that no state is on track to fully meet those standards by the 2025 deadline. The recent suit said the EPA is violating the Clean Water Act by letting Pennsylvania in particular fall too short. Under the new settlement, the agency would step up its oversight and funding of Pennsylvania's efforts. Federal officials would also agree to evaluate how each Bay State fared in meeting the 2025 goals by the end of the following year. Terms are subject to change after public comment on the proposal over the next month.
Catherine Hafner reporting. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Tuesday.